by Fonzie. D.Y.
Sabes que ya llevo un rato mirándote. Tengo que bailar contigo hoy.
Vi que tu mirada ya estaba llamándome. Muéstrame el camino que yo voy.
Oh, tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. Solo con pensarlo se acelera el pulso.
Oh yeah. Ya me está gustando más de lo normal. Todo mi sentido va pidiendo más. Esto hay que tomarlo sin ningún apuro.
Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firma en las paredes de tu laberinto y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito.
Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Y es que esa belleza es un rompecabezas, pero pa' montarlo aquí tengo la pieza. Oye,
despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firma las paredes de tu laberinto. Hacerlo en una playa en Puerto Rico, hasta que las olas griten ay bendito, para que mi sello se quede contigo.
Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Enseñas a mi boca tus lugares favoritos.
Favorito, favorito. Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Well, that was impossible to stay still to, wasn't it? It was Despacito by Luis Fonsi, a favourite track of today's guest, Professor Andrew Knight, who will be chatting with Paul Judge shortly. Nō mai haere mai, ko Sandra Kailaho, and you're with Safe and Sound, New Zealand's animal rights radio show. We broadcast from Free FM in Hamilton City, and we're proudly sponsored by Village Organics in Frankton Village, opposite the Frankton Hotel. They stock lots of vegan products, so if you're local, do check them out. Andrew Knight is Professor of Animal Welfare and Ethics and Founding Director of the Centre for Animal Welfare at the University of Winchester. He's an EBVS European and RCVS veterinary specialist in animal welfare science, ethics and law, an American veterinary specialist in animal welfare, a fellow of the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons and a senior fellow of the UK Higher Education Academy. He's currently on secondment to animal advocacy organisation SAFE here in New Zealand, where he's a director of research and education. In fact, people who listen regularly to this show will know that I interviewed Professor Andrew Knight a few months ago. Today, his topic is so-called pests. What animals are considered pests in New Zealand? What are we doing about them? And are there any alternatives to the wholesale slaughter methods that we currently use that cause untold suffering to the animals? He began by briefly outlining how the problem of pests began in New Zealand.
New Zealand is unique amongst countries in having virtually no native mammals. The moa, the giant extinct bird, was the closest thing that there was to a large mammal prehistorically and historically in New Zealand. And then, of course, European colonists arrived, introducing a range of mammals to New Zealand. Animals like cats, possums, rats, stoats, rabbits that have spread across the country and caused significant damage, unfortunately, to New Zealand's native birds. New Zealand had an array of quite amazing birds, many of which are not found anywhere else. So that's caused a giant problem. On the one hand, these are all very sentient animals and have interests of their own, and it's not ethical to try to kill them and remove them from the environment in ways that are very inhumane to them. On the other hand, their presence there is also impacting native bird species. And New Zealand's native bird species are very much part of its what makes up its image as being a pristine country with a unique native fauna. So it's a real dilemma over here in New Zealand, and one that unfortunately the government is tackling by resorting to some pretty cruel methods to try to deal with the introduced mammal species.
That is the problem, isn't it? It's the dilemma of trying to conserve the indigenous animals and birds and the problems with their pest control techniques.
On the face of it, it does seem to be a dilemma. On the one hand, there's this desire to try to get rid of all these introduced mammals to help preserve the native bird species. On the other hand, there's the desire to try to be humane to the introduced mammals themselves. So on the face of it, these two things aren't very compatible, because the methods that are commonly used to try to get rid of the introduced species are quite inhumane. But actually, if you look a little bit deeper into this, you start to see that the methods being used to try to control the introduced animals are not very effective as a strategy for achieving the objectives, and that there are other methods that could be used which are actually a lot more humane. So what appears to be a dilemma at first glance becomes less so when you dig into it a bit more deeply.
And it's to do with the demonisation of so-called pest animals, isn't it? Do you want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, in my opinion,
sure.
the use of of these cruel pesticides like 1080 and Brudificum and so on, it's really, we only accept it because we've demonised these animals.
Yes, very much so. Possums in particular are the target of 1080 poisoning in New Zealand. And it's quite remarkable how possums are treated by New Zealanders and portrayed in the media in New Zealand. Mm. Possums are not just subjected to a campaign to remove them from the environment humanely, but they're actually vilified as well. They are portrayed as being menacing introduced predators that rampage across the forest, destroying young chicks and eggs of bird species and trees. People steer cars towards them on the roads. People, primary schools, for goodness sakes, have competitions whereby prizes are awarded to children for the number of possums that they're able to kill in a single day.
Or dress them up.
With their parents, and dress up the dead bodies in ways that are very demeaning.
Yes.
There was a school called Drury School in South Auckland in June of last year. Made world headlines by having a competition like this, and then the baby possums in the pouches of the dead mothers were actually taken out and drowned in a bucket of water, which is extremely inhumane and illegal.
Yes,
I think that attracted widespread condemnation.
Yes, I have to admit, I was part of the team that exposed that. I was photographing the drowning of those joeys.
It's certainly wonderful that you're able to do that. That went around the world, and people everywhere other than New Zealand are really shocked that we could treat such a defenceless young animal. These little joeys are only a few centimetres long. They're hairless and blind initially in their mother's pouches and very dependent. You couldn't think of a more harmless animal in the world, more in need of care and protection, and to treat those animals in such an inhumane way is beggars belief, and then to encourage children to participate in that. And one of the impacts that that can have is on the development of those children in ways that are not desirable. As well as being very cruel to the possums themselves, it also is well understood from many, many studies in the field of sociology that when people, and particularly children, are involved in acts of violence towards animals, that tends to decrease their empathy and desensitize them to those acts of violence and increase the risks that they will go on to be violent to others in later life. Now, that may be other animals, but unfortunately, it's often also vulnerable people. So we're talking about women, children, and the elderly. And the links are now so well established that this has become a field of sociological research, and it's referred to as the link. So we know that when we encourage children to participate in this kind of cruel and violent behaviour towards defenceless animals, that's likely to also contribute to adverse social effects in later life.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because it's almost like a taboo subject in this country, our violence towards animals, that, you know, and linking it to domestic violence and our terrible high rates of domestic violence.
Domestic violence is a really big problem in New Zealand, and you know, the last thing we ought to be doing is having governmental primary school sanctioned events designed to encourage violent behaviour in children. I don't think any other country in the world would dream of doing anything, so it would be farcical if it wasn't so serious. But here in New Zealand, that seems to be encouraged, so it's extremely disturbing, to be honest.
But it's, I mean, there's a growing popularity of hunting sports, including archery, the use of bow and arrows to go out and hunt animals. I mean, I just see that as just appalling cruelty. These animals are often run off into the bush with an arrow through them and take, you know, must take days to die. I just don't understand how that is acceptable. It's the same kind of rural kind of communities that seem to accept this behaviour. I mean, I witnessed this with this Drury school when we were there, and the prize giving, and the you know, when the people started to get a bit suspicious of us, we were treated a bit like pariah, you know. It's like, we had to really make a quick exit out of there.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, it's a really appalling thing when you confront that that kind of culture.
Yes, my partner was at a rodeo, which is another public spectacle for entertainment involving blatant animal cruelty that is banned in many other countries but seems to have quite a following here in New Zealand. And she was watching and taking photographs, and she started, because she wasn't clapping and cheering like the others, I think people there became suspicious, and they surrounded and intimidated her and stopped her from taking any further photographs. So people can have some pretty disturbing attitudes in this country, and that is not entirely surprising when the abuse of animals is so sanctioned socially, even by the highest levels of government, in the case of the Predator Control Program.
So getting back to 1080 and this 2050 pest-free target of the government that the last government announced, what is it about 1080, for the benefit of the listening public to our show, what is it about 1080 and other forms of poison like Bredificum that is so cruel and inhumane?
Well, 1080 is a very cruel method of killing, and the symptoms are almost never reported. There's quite a lot of coverage of the 1080 poisoning campaign in the media, but you almost never see any description of what it actually does to the animals, which is quite remarkable when you think about it. So the symptoms are quite severe. The poisoned possums tend to experience things like vomiting, collapse, muscle tremors, convulsions, breathing difficulty, cardiac and respiratory arrest. I've been looking at an account in preparation for this interview of the effects on some possums that were poisoned, and describes spasms involving the limbs and the body, vocalising during these spasms, tremors, seizures, vocalisation being loud and prolonged, squeaking, gasping, gagging noises, and so on. And this and more horrible things I don't want to go on about for the sake of the listeners, carried on for anywhere between 6 to 18 hours. So it's a very inhumane way of killing, to be honest. It's described sometimes as being moderately humane. one shudders to imagine what would be considered inhumane if 1080 killing is moderately humane. It's obviously not moderately humane. It's extremely cruel. It's prolonged. It does go on for hours. In some species, it may go on for days. It is toxic to pretty much all animal species at different doses. It's particularly toxic to cats and dogs and pigs. So it definitely poses a danger to people hiking with their dogs that might come across poison baits, for example. And it poses dangers to other wildlife too, even including animals like native birds, as 1080 poisoning is intended to protect.
Well, it's the carrion feeders, isn't it? Especially the large carrion feeders like the falcons, the rare ones like that.
Yeah, the poisoned rats and stoats and possums are consumed by these carrion-eating birds, and secondary poisoning, as we call it, is very common, unfortunately.
Moorpooks, it's terrible, I believe. It's hitting them hard, as the New Zealand robin, I believe.
Yes. So the effect is by no means guaranteed that this will be targeted entirely towards the rats, stoats and possums that are being targeted, and that the native birds will not be affected. As a matter of fact, what you often do see is that 6 months after a poisoning drop, the rat populations have rebounded to almost what they were before the drop, and there can be adverse impacts on some native bird species as well. So the benefits are often greatly overstated, and the harms, particularly the cruelty to poisoned animals of all kinds, are rarely mentioned at all.
So it's been used in New Zealand since about 1960, I understand, and we're still using it in huge amounts of tonnage. I wonder, what is it about 1080 that people don't get, that's not actually working?
Yes, New Zealand, I believe, consumes about 80% of the worldwide 1080 production for such a tiny country. It's been banned in many other countries because of its severe toxicity, and its indiscriminate toxicity, poisoning, as I say, pretty much all animal species. But here in New Zealand, I've seen different estimates of the amount that is spent on this. One was $70 million annually. Another estimate was that the predator-free project is expected to cost $25 billion in total, in a country where the GDP is only $230 billion, so that's more than 10%. So there's massive amounts of money being spent on this, and as I say, it is dropped over very large proportions of native forest and bush, poisoning all sorts of animals in the process. And in return for all of that, it's not actually necessarily that effective, because you do see those rebounds in populations. When a killing method is successful in eliminating only some of the target population, then what it effectively does is it makes more food and more space and more resources available to any survivors.
That's right.
And those survivors consequently do much better, and they breed better. They have larger litters and the greater survival chances of their offspring, and that's why you see the rebounds in populations afterwards. But fortunately, there is another strategy to trying to control these animals, which targets their reproductive systems, which can be much more effective.
And how far down the track are we with that science?
So we're talking now about immunocontraception. So that is really trying to produce vaccines to stimulate the body's own immune system to produce antibodies that will destroy elements of sperm or eggs. And in particular with possums, we're talking about the possum egg and the protein coat surrounding the possum egg, which is called the zona pellucida. And it's possible to actually genetically engineer some bacteria and even some plants to produce some of the proteins that are found inside the protein coat around the possum egg. Those proteins can then be delivered to the possums in killed bacteria or plant products, and that can stimulate the body's own immune system to produce antibodies against these foreign proteins coming in. And the foreign proteins actually contain parts of the same protein that are in the possum egg. So the antibodies go to work, and they kill the foreign proteins coming in, and what would be living bacteria in the natural world, although they're killed bacteria that are provided in baits. And as a side effect of killing the foreign organisms coming in, they also destroy or interfere with the possum's own egg. greatly decreasing their fertility levels. So this is a technology that's been developed for use now in more than 100 species, and there is no reason why we shouldn't be, I think, redirecting some of the vast amounts of money spent annually on 1080 poisoning on a mass scale into the further development and deployment of immunocontraception, because unlike 1080 or other killing methods, this is one that targets the reproductive system, so you don't get survivors successfully breeding, in fact breeding even more successfully because there's now more space and food, and very rapidly regenerating the population, so you're back to square one. That doesn't happen with methods that target the reproductive system. So it's potentially much more effective as well as being more humane.
Yes, but just there is the issue that I've heard being voiced is that it could affect entire populations of possums in countries where they're treated well, like in Australia, their native country, Australia. I mean, is that a danger? Or
It's always going to be a danger if somebody was to foolishly go and try to produce the same technology on a widespread scale in Australia. But somebody would literally be having to blanket vast areas of Australia with baits that have this sort of protein in to stimulate the Australian possum immune system. So it's not something that would spread across the country by itself like a virus. It's delivered through ghost bacteria. That's bacteria that have actually been killed and stuck into food that the possums will eat. So it's not something that could get out of control.
It
would have to be a deliberate attempt to do so.
It's not GE as we understand it.
I mean, it is genetically engineered, but after the bacteria have produced the possum proteins, the bacteria are then all killed, often by irradiation. So they're not, you know, they're not alive. They still stimulate the immune system, but they don't have the capacity to reproduce themselves and spread across the landscape.
We're running out of time here, but I'm really interested in some of your research you've done on animal intelligence, cognitive levels of understanding and so on, and animals and the moral implications for that. I wonder, I mean, I've always thought, why don't we just catch all these possums and rehome them in Australia? What are your thoughts on that? Is it a
That would be a lovely idea. The numbers of these possums, it's not known how many there are exactly, but it's thought that there's between 30 to 70 million of them across New Zealand. So good luck catching them all.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, I've got a neighbour with a couple of pet possums, and I was surprised to find that it's actually legal in this country to have pet possums in your backyard, but these people have, and they are so cute. This one walks all over them and walks around the lounge and all over the furniture, and just like a pet cat, you know. It's a beautiful little
animal. And as I say, people in other countries are amazed that New Zealanders revile these lovely animals so much and treat them so coolly. There is quite an underground industry for saving possums here in New Zealand. It's like the Underground Railroad of the civil rights here in the US. It is somewhat underground, although it might be legal. It's widely condemned, so people often don't advertise that they're involved. That's something that listeners could consider getting involved in if they cared about possums in New Zealand.
And like you say, it's countering the insidious propaganda machine, isn't it, all the time, this demonisation of these animals.
Yes, when people see what these animals are really like, if they adopt them and look after them, I think their opinions would dramatically turn around.
Now, look, we're going to have to leave it there, Andrew. I really thank you so much for being on the show. We'd love to talk to you again. You've got such a wide range of interests that we're all interested in this program. So how about we talk to you another time? I'd really like to do that.
Great. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on the show.
Our thanks to Andrew and to Paul. Compassionate conservation is a growing movement, and its guiding principle is first, do no harm. It's an approach that is driven by a desire to eliminate unnecessary suffering and to prioritize animals as individuals, not just as a species. It's also a route to better conservation because, as Andrew was saying, 1080, for example, which is so horrifically cruel to the animals, is not that effective. So mistreatment of animals is producing poor conservation outcomes and therefore is bad science. It's also, I would add, immoral. We'll go out on a track that's a favourite of mine, Ben by Michael Jackson. Rats are considered pests as well in New Zealand, but as the lyrics say, Ben, most people would turn you away. They don't see you as I do. I wish they would try to. Until next week, go well, everyone. Bye-bye.